Thursday, 10th of January. Should be partly sunny and seasonal. Today's high 29, overnight low 19, 33 degrees on Friday, 36 on Saturday. There's also a 50-50 chance of some light rain or snow on Saturday, 32 on Sunday, 36 on Monday, 39 on Tuesday. Here are the current numbers. Wind northwest at 9, 16 degrees across the board. Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, and Milwaukee. Wind chill 3 above. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 11 minutes after 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am delighted to welcome into our studios for the first time this year, the first time in 2019, our good friend Nan Calvert, who joins us once a month to help co-host and organize a conversation related to some facet of the environment, of the natural world around us. And Nan has chosen to kick off 2019 with probably the single most important environmental issue for us here in southeastern Wisconsin, or at least something that is relatively unique to us here in southeastern Wisconsin, namely Lake Michigan and Lake Michigan's health and well-being as this amazing body of water that impacts our lives in so many, many different ways. So first of all, Nan Calvert, we welcome you back. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Happy New Year, Greg, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Oh, to all our listeners. So you have brought with you today someone that you've just met, I think, this morning for the first time face-to-face, right?
Yes.
Casey Eggleston, who is program officer for something called Fund for Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. So Nan, tell us when you first came across Fund for Lake Michigan and got the idea of having someone from there joining us?
Being with Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, Fund for Lake Michigan is very, very important to us. And because we work with them so closely, you know, we have a good idea of the importance of the Fund for Lake Michigan and what they do. But there are entities within our, you know, within the larger environmental community that do great work, but they're not necessarily household names like Sierra Club or Weed Out or Hoy Audubon or something like that. And so I thought, well, you know, I think people need to know about the Fund for Lake Michigan and the amazing impact that it has. And I was glad to hear you say that, you know, Lake Michigan is a key aspect for all of us. And I think sometimes those of us who live close to the lake, you know, there are those of us who can just look out our window and see the lake, or, you know, we're so close to it and we've kind of lived with it for most of our lives, we begin to take it for granted and we don't realize that other people just don't have that opportunity. They don't have this amazingly valuable thing, literally sometimes right in their front yard. And we begin to sort of, you know, neglect it a little bit, and we simply can't do that. I mean, the Great Lakes in general are something that, you know, people just don't have. It's, you know, it's unique in the world. And so living close to Lake Michigan, we have to begin to realize that we have to take care of it because, you know, that's where a lot of us get our drinking water and we play and we sail and we swim. And so it's important to safeguard that invaluable resource.
Absolutely. And to understand it and to understand what keeps it healthy and the nature of the things that threaten it. So we have with us today, as I said, Casey Eggleston, who is the program officer for this group called Fund for Lake Michigan, which funds a whole host of different projects related to Lake Michigan and its well-being. So first of all, Casey, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I'm really happy to be here.
Really glad that we can have this conversation. Since you've never been on the morning show before, I want to be sure to give you a chance to have you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and I hope you'll start by telling us about this wonderful town of Ryo, which is your hometown.
I am a native.
I never heard of until you started telling us about it.
I am a native Wisconsinite from the booming metropolis of Ryo, R-I-O. It's about 30 miles north of Madison, and it's a town of about 900 people. Very, very small high school I went to. We had 33 in my graduating class, three of which, one was my twin brother and one was my first cousin. So we were 10% of my graduating class.
Right. You were telling me before we went on the air that that school is the kind of tiny high school, class of 33, that so you know, every guy plays football and every guy plays basketball and every guy probably sings in the choir whether they can sing or not. And
it's
so
mandatory. Otherwise, it goes under. Yep, you have to participate in everything. I will say one of the great benefits growing up in Ryo was the environment around it. We're very close to Eldo Leopold's shack on the Wisconsin River, as well as John Muir, where he grew up in Marquette County. We're about equal distance between those. So I've always thought of it as the hotbed of conservation ethic in Wisconsin.
Wow. So at what point in your life, and maybe it has something to do with what you were just talking about, did matters related to the environment really start to become really important to you to the extent that obviously you've devoted at least a good portion of your professional life to it?
Yeah, I started working for a state senator after I graduated from college in the Capitol, and he was very interested in natural resources and was key in writing the natural resources budget. And inside that office, I was the only one that had grown up in a rural area and had fished and hunted, and also the only one kind of interested in those issues. So by default, I got those. And I got very interested in them in working. Wisconsin's just a beautiful place to live. And when you start visiting all the parks, state parks, county parks we have, you just grow more and more in love with the natural environment here. And it kicked me off after that. I worked for the Nature Conservancy, which is the largest land trust in the state. For 10 years, I was their director of state government relations. And then for the last 5 years, I've been program officer with the Fund for Lake Michigan.
Wow. I should think that one really fun part of doing that work at the Nature Conservancy was that it fed into something you'd already done. You'd already been in Madison and already probably had a pretty good sense of how things work in Madison and the kind of connections that need to be made to really enhance that kind of work.
Yeah. A lot of the best term out there were about as popular as used car salesmen. But organizations like that, it's really important that they have a voice in state agencies and state government and make sure we do our best for the resources. So it was, and along with this job, being able to promote projects that just make the state better every day environmentally. It's very rewarding.
Very good. So for 5 years now, you have been program officer for Fund for Lake Michigan. Explain what that work is about or what that position really entails.
Yeah, I'll give a little background on what the fund is first. We're a private foundation that was created out of a settlement over the Oak Creek Power Plant, which is right on the shores of Lake Michigan in southern Milwaukee County. When that facility expanded in the mid-2000s, people were concerned about damage to water quality in the immediate area around Lake Michigan. And the parties to that settlement, who were Clean Wisconsin, Sierra Club, We Energies, Madison Gas and Electric, and WPPI agreed to create the fund to help mitigate that damage that might occur. They agreed to fund $4 million a year for 25 years with the very broad mission of improving the water quality of Lake Michigan. So it was as broad as that. We have taken that. Our primary focus is always improving water quality, but secondarily, we want the projects we fund to have maximum benefit to the quality of life of people that live in the Lake Michigan watershed. We want it to improve their public recreation opportunities. We want to improve economic development. We want highest impact environmental improvements. So we try and find partners that can do those projects and really maximize the dollars that were allocated. Mm.
What do you mean, or how are you using the term water quality when you say that that's really the heart and soul, the central tenet of why you exist and the central tenet of the projects that you fund? How are you using that term water quality and then water quality improvement?
Yeah, well, water in our area can have a lot of issues. We have nutrient issues, which are phosphorus, nitrogen, that are getting into the system and making our water too productive, actually. It allows algae and plants to grow much too quickly. It takes the oxygen out of the rivers. It's bad for the aquatic species that live there. It can be sediment into the lake. Sediment has detrimental impacts on our harbors. It forces us to dredge. It's bad for spawning beds for the native fish species that we like to have here. Water quality is also damaged from flooding and large storm events. So water quality also encompasses slowing water down, holding it in wetlands, giving it more places to infiltrate into the ground.
So you're really using that term very holistically. I mean, talking about water quality in several different respects, and not just how fresh is it or how close could it be to drinking quality, but just in every respect.
Even temperature is important. Warm water in a lot of our streams is detrimental to species, and it also can cause bad algae blooms that can be dangerous for water. So even temperature is critical and included in water quality. Yep.
So what is the mechanism by which you determine, in a sense, what the most serious issues are and the best way to address them? Or is that a determination that, in a sense, gets made elsewhere by other entities?
We really let the communities tell us what their biggest concerns are, what problems they have, and try and help. So we award grants to nonprofits, local units of government, and universities, and we partner with them to determine what best can fix the problems they have in their specific river, in their wetlands, on their Lake Michigan coastline, and how we can best use those funding. We accept applications throughout the year. We do have it's a nice amount of money. As you can imagine, there's way, way more demand for projects than money we have available. So like I was saying before, with secondary benefits, we rate the project applications we get based on what do they do for water quality, and then how many people's lives will they make better? How can we improve quality of life in the area?
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Casey Eggleston, who is Program Director for Fund for Lake Michigan. And Fund for Lake Michigan, which operates under the auspices of the Greater Milwaukee Foundation, is interested in doing all it can to improving the water quality of Lake Michigan. And so they have funded all kinds of different projects related to the quality of Lake Michigan in many, many respects. And Nan Calvert is with us as well. And she, of course, helped to orchestrate this conversation today. And I suspect, Nan, you appreciate the sort of the comprehensive way in which Corey is talking about a lot of these issues.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, again, you know, it's all about how water connects us with it connects us within our communities and in our human-made communities, but it also connects us in the natural world. And if we don't have water quality, we have very little of anything, because you know if you have to avoid bodies of water because they're contaminated, if you can't drink the water that comes out of the lake because it's contaminated, then you don't have quality of life. And when Casey was talking about, you know, how can we improve the quality of life for residents around, you know, whatever body of water it happens to be, we talk about that a lot also in terms of usage. Is this a place people want to go? Is it a place where they want to walk and raise their kids and ride their bicycles and rollerblade and do all of those things? And a terrific example of that is the enormous restoration, which we could spend several shows on, that Mount Pleasant did around the Pike River, and you know, the natural habitat that was restored and walking paths, and you know, it's a great community magnet now. People are out there when the weather is nice. You know, they're looking at birds and insects and native plants, and they're out there connecting with one another and recreating, and it's just a terrific thing. I think sometimes we sort of compartmentalize everything. You know, there's the lake, and here's where I work, and here's my house, but it's all part of one big thing.
Mm-hmm. And as you were talking about that, it just made me realize that, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Lake Erie, one of the other great lakes, was supposedly dead for a while. I mean, mm-hmm. the water was of such a terrible quality that, I mean, essentially hardly anything could live in it, and I should think people would have been crazy to try to swim in it. And I'm just was just thinking, what was that like for the people who lived around Lake Erie at a time when Lake Erie was, in almost every respect, a dead and mm-hmm. poisoned lake, and just how terrible that would be?
I think it would be very depressing. And what, you know, you'd think about, why do I want to stay here now?
Right, right. And of course, Lake Erie has made some kind of comeback from that terrible state. I don't know what its quality is today, but in some respects, that puts Lake Michigan in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when your water starts on fire like the Cuyahoga River did, yeah, it's a sure sign that some mistakes have been made, right?
Something is amiss.
And we, you know, we had a similar history in Wisconsin too. And it is our history. That's the reason the cities are where they are. They're because of Lake Michigan, and industry moved and jobs moved here because of the lake and shipping. The Milwaukee River was a similar example of Cuyahoga. It, I don't believe, caught on fire, but I might even be wrong on that. And the shoreline along the Milwaukee River used to be the cheapest real estate in Milwaukee. It was just dead. It was brownfields and coal piles. Mm-hmm. If you go down to the Fourth Ward now, those are the most expensive condos in Milwaukee, are on the river. And the comeback that river has made and the difference it's made in economic development and jobs and quality of life, that is the real story of what these comebacks can do to communities. They did a swimming race in the Milwaukee River this summer, mm-hmm. for the first time in people's memory. Mm. And I think that's just a great sign of how far we've come. Now, there's a lot of work to be done yet. The Milwaukee River and most of our rivers in southeast Wisconsin still have a lot of challenges, but we are making progress. I think that's the good story to be told.
You know, and then you think about, too, we are making progress. And then there's a flood. So all of that stuff ends up receding back into that body of water. And now you kind of have to begin once again and, you know, get it up to a certain level. So there are so many pressures for every single body of water, whether it's some small tributary or it's as big as Lake Michigan. There are enormous environmental pressures from, you know, all of the things that Casey was mentioning to, you know, this winter it's not so bad because unfortunately we haven't had any snow, but, you know, de-icing chemicals that we put on our walkways and driveways and on the roads, it doesn't go to the magic land of away. It washes into our waterways, and it settles down onto the bottom. So our fresh waterways are becoming more and more saline, and that has far-reaching impacts on fish, fish's ability to reproduce, their size, their ability to live in a salinated environment. It impacts native plants. It makes it easier for non-native plants to grow. So there are lots and lots of impacts that we're really working hard to mitigate. Mm.
Casey, one of the things I noticed when I visited the website of Fund for Lake Michigan, and it's a wonderful website, by the way, is how some of what you are funding are actual projects, and we'll talk about some of those, but also you fund studies. I wonder if you could kind of give us a brief rundown of the kind of studies that are important enough that Fund for Lake Michigan would devote at least some of your limited dollars to.
Yeah, we've worked quite a bit with universities, particularly UWM, their Freshwater Sciences Center, which is on the Inner Harbor in Milwaukee, a beautiful new facility. And I think one of the neat studies we've done with them and reaches out to other communities is a harbor study. Their department has taken their boat out into harbors and dove onto the breakwaters, into the dredge canals to find out where species are using these highly changed environments. And are there ways within, you know, the confines of making them available for shipping yet and their other uses that we can do more for species? And they found that even little changes like the size of rock that the Army Corps of Engineers is using in breakwalls changes what species can use that section of wall and creates new areas for them to propagate, to feed, to grow, helps them move around the harbor. It's something that it's such a big lake, and there's been a lot of science done on it, but so little is known about how the food webs work underneath and how the species move, what they can use and what they can't use. How can you make sheet pile more usable for species moving through there? So much you can do, and some of it isn't the expense. It's just knowing to do the right thing at the right time.
Right, and someone has to study that and figure that out, determine that through the scientific method.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting point. So in other words, lots and lots of study has been done of Lake Michigan, but by no means is that process done. It's not like we know everything there is to know.
Right. Yeah, another example is it's called the Genomics Lab at UWM. And similar to the Human Genome Project, which most people are probably familiar with, mapping the human genome, they have a very impressive machine there that can map genomes for the aquatic species that live here. And by doing that, you're able to study the effects, the things we're putting into our waterways, the effect it's having on those species, pharmaceutical drugs that we're putting in, how is saline levels affecting these species. This lab's able to determine those impacts and try and give us solutions to how we can prevent things from happening. So impressive school.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how would you say roughly your funding splits between funding studies and funding actual restoration work?
Yeah, I would say the large percentage goes to on-the-ground implementation projects, projects like beach restorations, probably 75% that neighborhood, on-the-ground physical projects that people can see. And then the other 25 goes to research and some to education and outreach, people that are engaging the community, helping them learn about water issues.
So when you are funding an actual implementation project, as you called it, typically who is getting the money or who is asking you for money?
Yeah, we have a lot of partners we've worked with, well over 100 organizations around the state, and about 50-50 are governmental. City of Kenosha has been a great partner of ours. Kenosha County has been a really good partner. Same with City of Racine and Racine County. And then Root Pike Wind down here is an organization that is critical in making people aware the dollars are available, applying for dollars. We've done great projects. City of Kenosha, Simmons Beach is one of my favorite projects. It's a beautiful beach and resource that Kenosha has. And we've learned, people, I think, believed, me included, that pollution issues at beaches were related to things happening a long ways away, sewer overflows in Milwaukee or pollution coming in from Chicago. What we've learned, and a lot of it through Julie Kinzelman's work up in the city of Racine, is really these problems are much more localized than we thought, which is a positive because communities can get behind preventing stormwater from running over their beaches, getting rid of birds loafing on the beaches, which causes E. coli issues, building back sand dunes and native vegetation to help filter water. And when they do these things, beaches like Simmons Beach, North Beach, and in Racine, massive reductions in the number of closings they have every year. And those closings are exactly what we're talking about, quality of life, because those people are coming and enjoying Lake Michigan on their day off, and they're spending money in downtown Racine and downtown Kenosha. They're bringing life to downtown. The usage of North Beach since restoration has increased, I think, four times, from 50,000 people annually to over 200,000 people use that beach now. So those are the projects where you can see impact, you can see the money going in on the ground, and really see the benefit in the community. So I applaud City of Racine, Mayor Antonarian, and County Executive Cruiser have both been real leaders on those kind of issues, as well as Root Pike Wind.
So when you're talking about a beach restoration, I think a lot of people, when they hear that term, think about the beach. And what you're really talking about primarily is the water adjacent to the beach.
Yeah. It's very common when communities developed that they would route their stormwater outfalls out near their beaches because they're public property. So the utility didn't have to go through private property. And those outfalls are bringing everything that we have on our streets, from dog waste to oil to leaves and stick, everything else. And it's dumping it into water adjacent to the beach. Mm-hmm. That sits and festers and stews. If there's not good circulation through the beach, you know, water moving through, that's what causes beach closings.
Wow. So another important aspect of what Fund for Lake Michigan helps to make possible is wetland restoration. Nan, when was it that we had a very recent conversation about wetland restoration?
Wasn't it in December with Alice Thompson, the great Alice Thompson of Thompson & Associates?
Okay.
Yes.
So that would be a firm that actually engaged in the actual work. And so not that Fund for Lake Michigan would write a check to Alice Thompson, but some city or municipality might hire Alice Thompson to get out there and do wetland restoration.
Right.
And Fund for Lake Michigan might very likely be a player in making that possible. So we probably don't have to spend a ton of time, since we did. That was a really thorough conversation mm-hmm. about how wetland restoration occurs. But Corey, maybe you could give us your perspective on the most important facets of that, and maybe one or two notable wetland restoration projects that Fund for Lake Michigan has been part of.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'm sure Alice talked about it too. One of the problems we have in our developed communities is too much water moving too fast through our river systems. And that's what causes the damage, right? That's what causes erosion. That's what causes nutrients to come off. Wetlands are nature's buffer to that happening. Wetlands hold water back. They give water a place to go that isn't people's basements. And they allow water to infiltrate into the ground like it would have done naturally. We're in the process of doing a project with Kenosha County Parks right now up in Petrifying Springs. We've done a couple of projects in that park. And first off, that is a beautiful park. One of the nicest county parks I've been to anywhere in Wisconsin. I love going through there whenever I'm able to. They had a dam in that park an earthen dam 7-8 years ago that was causing problems. It was slowing water down. It was causing flooding. It was causing sedimentation behind it. We helped fund first a grant to remove that dam, let the river flow more naturally. It reconnected 22 miles of stream upstream that fish could now use, and it dramatically reduced flooding in that park. Now, after that's been done, the county has gone and developed a plan of naturalizing the stream along that, which would have all been floodplain wetlands. So when the river floods, you can imagine it going out of its bank and having a place to go. The water sits there for a while and slowly comes back into the river instead of just charging down that and causing damage downstream. So it's in a park. People are going to be able to enjoy this beautiful wetland. It's going to have walks around it and through it. So it's providing that public benefit. But for everyone that lives downstream on the Pike River, it's also going to slow that water down so it's not hurting your properties further downstream. Hmm.
Corey, when we were talking, Casey, before we were talking, before we went on the air, we were talking about some of the projects that you are part of, and you used a term that made Nan's eyes light up. But I'm trying to remember what that term is.
Remeandering streams.
So yeah. Making streams meander again.
Yeah. Yeah. So naturally, that's what streams want to do. I whenever I'm flying, this might make me a little bit of a nerd. I love looking out of planes and seeing old stream remeanders and how rivers move and old oxbows, which are bends in the river that used to be connected but no longer are. Streams want to meander back and forth. For hundreds of years, over 100 years, we've been channelizing streams, particularly in agricultural areas, to get rid of water as fast as possible. When you do that, you are constantly fighting the stream from that point forward from doing what the stream wants to do. Hmm. And it costs more and more and more money. You have to add rock. You have to armor it. If you allow a stream a little more room and allow it the bends again, you're doing what I was saying before. You're slowing the water down, and you're giving it time to infiltrate into the ground, which is critical in flood preventing floods, managing stormwater, and ecologically.
Right, and critical to that floodplain evolution. So it's whatever happens upland of a stream, a river, a lake is critically important to the quality of water in that body of water. So, and that means, you know, we're not just talking about in a more natural area like a park or Chewaukee Prairie or whatever it might be. We're talking about what happens upland in our neighborhoods as well. Mm. So everything you do on your property, whether it's on your driveway or your lawn, eventually impacts that quality of water. And if you have good upland practices and you have good upland habitat, you can very positively impact the quality of water in your area.
So and beyond the quality of the water that's right where you are,
exactly.
It's impacting that same water as it travels mm-hmm. to other places.
Exactly.
Very, very good point. Casey, on your website, I noticed a recent article about something that Fund for Lake Michigan has been involved in, involving the disposal of unused medicine. I thought we should maybe spend a minute or two just talking about this issue and maybe talk about the specific project that Fund for Lake Michigan has been part of with that.
Yeah. Emerging contaminants is a phrase that's being used a lot in wastewater treatment recently. There are a lot of things we're putting into our waterways that our sewer districts aren't equipped to handle and filter out. And pharmaceuticals are one of those. When people take their medicine, maybe they don't use everything in their bottle. It's very common to have those disposed in the toilet, flushed down, and it goes to our sewer districts. Those don't get filtered out before they get put out into the lake. And opioids impact aquatic animals just like they impact humans. And everything that humans are taking have some and mostly undetermined impacts on aquatic life. There are many other issues to also dispose of meds that are, you know, probably more important. Public safety, it helps prevent them from getting out in the community other ways. But we partnered with Take Back My Med Milwaukee to make disposal centers more prevalent in Milwaukee, make it easy for people to bring their medicine back and dispose of it appropriately so it stays out of the fish.
Hmm. Sounds like a very good idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about the number of antibiotics that are used not only by humans, but farm animals and pet animals, and, you know, it gets flushed down the toilet in one form or another, you know, that impacts everything.
Right.
So from macrobiotic to microbiotic communities.
And I think you're right that that's the kind of thing that you like to talk about, the magic land of away.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like when we flush anything down the toilet, it goes away and is no longer a concern. And mm-hmm. that's just not the way it is. It's almost as though people need a big sign over their toilets just mm-hmm. reminding them of what that toilet should not be used for in terms of disposal.
Right. You know, and it's easy. I mean, we go to our taps and we turn the water on and take a drink of water, and we don't really think about it much. In terms, you know, from the aspect of the filtration plants, the water filtration plants, they can't filter everything out. They're working hard and their technologies improve, you know, just like all other technologies improve, but they, with each new chemical onslaught and with each new chemical interaction, you know, you're always a little bit behind the eight ball.
Perpetually.
Yeah.
Before we get to the last thing that I know you want to talk about, Casey, which is kind of a list of hidden gems along Lake Michigan, are there any other specific projects that you wanted to briefly mention? We've touched on quite a few already.
Yeah. This has been a great area of the state for us to partner with. The beach work specifically in Racine and here have been great. Kenosha Dunes State Natural Area, I think, is the last one I'd like to bring up. It's a hidden gem, but it's also a really challenged property. It's just south of the city of Kenosha. And like many places along the coast, it's suffered from pretty severe erosion issues. The Natural Resources Foundation and the Wisconsin DNR have looked at that property as maybe a way to test new strategies to help us protect our bluffs in Wisconsin. And they've come up with design plans for submerged islands offshore that can take the wave energy and disperse it, but still allow water flow to come into the beach and not create water quality issues. These practices, they're very expensive, you know, as you can imagine, any breakwell is anywhere. And but it's an issue I think a lot of people in Southeast Wisconsin know we have to start finding solutions to. It's really, especially with the high water we have right now, a really challenging situation. So I hope that project can come up with some ideas.
Very good. And we want to remind people that the website for Fund for Lake Michigan is fundforlakemichigan.org. And a lot of things are spelled out there, and very prominently are different links on which you can click if you want to pursue the possibility of seeking funding from Fund for Lake Michigan for a project that you are perhaps part of. So I know that in the course of the work that you do, you really get out and about, and I know that one of the things you were anxious to do today is share with us a list of what you regard as sort of hidden gems, some really beautiful places right along Lake Michigan that people might not be aware of.
Yeah, I was hoping I could help listeners out. One of the advantages of my job is I get to travel along all of Lake Michigan and visit a lot of small parks and places that people don't always get to. So I have a list, and I'll go from south to north if that works best. And if people can maybe check these out the next time they're traveling up I-43 or anywhere up into Door County. I think Cliffside County Park in Racine County, which is on the far northern border of Racine, is a great, it's a large park, beautiful bluffs, beautiful ravines. And when I have been there, very lightly used. You can really feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're right between Racine and Milwaukee County. You're right, you know, close to urban areas. So that's a short drive. There's a campground there. I can't vouch for that. I haven't camped there yet, but the park itself is definitely worth a trip and a walk and close to the listeners of the show.
And what is it called again?
Cliffside County Park. It's the far northern border of Racine County, right on the lake.
Interesting. Yep. Never seen it, never heard of it.
Yeah. So.
See?
Here we are.
One of our newest parks along the shore is Lake Vista Park in Oak Creek, which was built on old brownfield sites right on Lake Michigan on a very steep bluff. And the city of Oak Creek has done an amazing job of restoring. It's a giant area, and they have built the coolest shelters that are on Lake Michigan that I've seen anywhere. They're, I would say, Frank Lloyd-esque in the way they sit. So on a hot summer day, if you have some reading to do for work or just for pleasure, go out to these beautiful views, quiet. Not a lot of people were out there when I've been out there in the summer. Just a beautiful place to stop by.
Very good.
All right, going north, Schlitz Autobahn in Milwaukee. Probably many, many people have been there, but people that haven't should. It's a phenomenal resource in that part, northern Milwaukee County. Beautiful ravine system, beautiful shoreline, very naturalized, and again, in a heavy urban area up there. One of the best is in Ozaukee County, and it's called Lion's Den Gorge, which is a county park just south of Port Washington. And it is, again, up on a high bluff, and then through a huge stair system goes down into a ravine with a stream flowing through it and brings you out to a part of beach that very few people get to. It's about a mile and a half walk maybe for the full loop. It's a pretty good stretch of shoreline. And being a county park, it just doesn't get as much use as a state park would. People wouldn't go there. So that would be way up on my list. Lion's Den Gorge in Ozaukee County.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If you're looking for a beach close to Door County but without the large crowds, Crescent Beach in Algoma. Algoma is just south of Door County in Kewaunee County. They have a beach that's over a mile and a half long in a very small community. They have a very active friends group there that's built a nice walk along it. They have kite events. They have music events. They've really churned it into a great community asset, and it will have a third the number of people that you'll find up in Door County at their beaches. So a good place to stop on the way up to Door County if you're headed that way. And my last one, if I have time for one more, Ridges Sanctuary in Bailey's Harbor is a nature center that highlights the best system of ridge and swale systems that we have in Wisconsin, which are basically old beaches from thousands of years ago that have grown up. And they're small hills and valleys, one after another as you walk towards the lake. And they grow an amazing diversity of rare plant species and make for a great day's walk. And they've built a new nature center there that was built on a brownfield site in Bailey's Harbor. And the pollution was caused by 50 years of fish boils. Kerosene overflows from fish boils, not what you'd expect from a brownfield site.
No.
So they've restored the area. They have a beautiful nature center, and they have miles of trails to use up there. That's my last hidden gem.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I have more. It's the last
one. Wow, fantastic. A wonderful list, and I think that gives a lot of our listeners something to really think about. Wow. Glad we finished with that. Casey Eggleston, again, is the program officer for Fund for Lake Michigan. And you can find out more about what they do by going to their website, which, again, is fundforlakemichigan.org. Casey, it was great to meet you today and great to hear the exciting story of all that Fund for Lake Michigan does on behalf of this beautiful body of water on the shore of which we live and upon which we depend for so many things. So thank you for being here, and thank you for the good work that you and your colleagues do.
Well, thanks, Ken, for having me.
I'm really glad you could be here. All right, Nan Calvert, you have several things that you want to tell us about.
Well, I do. It's January 2019, and it's time to get creative at the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. The program is called Contemplation with Clay. There are two sessions, January 23rd and then January 30th, from 4:30 until 6:30 p.m. The fee is $25, and you have to register, and space is limited, but you're going to create glaze and fire a slab pot. You don't have to have any pottery experience. Just go and learn and create over those 2 days, and it sounds like it's going to be fun and well worth it. Pringle Nature Center, they're going to have a guided snowshoe hike this Saturday, January 12th at 1 p.m. Now, of course, there is no snow, but when we were talking about this earlier, the three of us, Greg and Casey and I, decided you should wear your snowshoes anyway. In the event that there is no snow, of course, it will just be a regular guided hike, free for people who are friends of Pringle Nature Center, and $7 for the general public. And Southeast Gateway Group of Sierra Club, they're having their annual planning meeting on January 12th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that's actually at Pringle Nature Center. They invite you to come if you have ideas and suggestions, actions you'd like to initiate, or talents that you'd like to contribute and share. Please join them in setting their priorities and goals for 2019. Feel free to bring a lunch. And that's it.
Wonderful. Nan Calvert joins us once a month, and Nan, it is always a pleasure to have you here, and we look forward to seeing you at some point in the month of February.
Yes, indeed. I will be here.
Exciting program. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
It's 8:56. This is the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, Dr. Gerald Mast, assistant professor, I should say associate professor of political science at Carthage College, will be joining us to talk about multiple issues and events related to the world of political science, including, of course, this current government shutdown with which we are contending, and what is ahead for that, and what is ahead for President Trump with a U.S. House of Representatives now controlled by the Democratic Party. How does that change the way he operates as president? The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived at WGTD.org. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. From WGTD's community calendar, the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra is going to be engaged in 2 performances this weekend of Richard Wagner's magnificent opera, The Flying Dutchman, Die Fliegende Holländer, in a performance that will include an array of marvelous soloists and the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra and chorus. Here's a little bit of the famous overture. Performances are Friday night at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And for more information, you can go to the orchestra's